here by the bottom part of the meeting.
Hold this to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Go ahead and move to the county administrator's report, Mr. Nichols.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. A very short report this afternoon since we have a number of other things to talk about. Probably talking for all, pretty good by on this. A couple things. The budget development process this year actually went very smoothly. And I thought it was very fruitful. It worked out really well. Specifically, I'd like to thank the three people that really did the loan work as part of our local finance director, Eric Ball, budget analyst, and Gil Parrish, our HR manager. Honestly, amazing professionals. They know their stuff inside and out, and there's not much that we could ask that they could finance too quickly or wouldn't know already. And they really did a great job. And I'm hoping you'll see the evidence of that when we run through the budget today. Also, like to announce that we hired the emergency services coordinator that had been offered by the board, Robert Tricolo. It's going to start February 18th. We had about 54, 55 candidates. Of those, we interviewed six did a couple interviews at home. And Mr. Tricolo was really just a great candidate. Good experience, good educational credentials, and comes from us from the Virginia Department of Emergency Management, but also has good background in fire and rescue volunteer work. So, comes from really good credentials we needed, which is great. And he's very excited to come. His office will be in Public Works, so there's an extra office there.
Again, please remember to keep your comments short. The board within 5 minutes and on time. Anyone wishing to address the board? Seeing none, was the first round of public comment?
Mr. Kenny, one note, if I may, the eyes. There are copies of the CIP and the budget package up here on the counter. If anybody wants those before we get the budget comments, see if I can.
We have no items of public hearing. We do have action matters. Have L contract award construction agreement with Combined Best Road, House Renovation, and Western Trailhead Project. Mr. Stevens.
Good afternoon. I think this one's a long time coming. Certainly, probably everybody in this room has a longer history with the Pleasant Grove House project than I do. But we're finally here to ask for approval to enter into a construction contract with Daniel and Company to do the rehabilitation project on the Pleasant Grove House. And just as a reminder, I think you probably already know, but the Western Trailhead Project with its restroom facility and parking lot has been combined into this. So the bid amount and the project is for the entire deal. I think last summer we're authorized to go out to bid with it as soon as VDOT approved the plans and specs. Once VDOT approved the plans and specs, we began making sure that everything was cool to put it out to bid, and we bid it in November and opened the bids in December, and now we're here before you to ask to let us go to a construction on it. Are there any questions?
I move to accept the low bid for the project from Daniels and Company Incorporated in the amount of $948,000 and to authorize the county administrator to issue notice of award to that firm. Further, I move to authorize the county administrator to execute, subject to the approval by the county attorney as to the form and VDOT approval of the bid, any and all agreements, certificates, and other documents required on behalf of the county of Louisiana. Carry out the term
of the board. Second. Motion made by Mr. Ellenbrock, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
Thank you.
One more note, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to acknowledge that Mrs. Booker has worked really, really hard on this project for a long time. But also the Louisiana County Historical Society has done a lot of work in advance of this, getting it, the hospital has been on the historic registry. Moss and he and others have done huge amounts of fundraising for this, and so that's a significant contribution to this point in time to getting to be able to do this award now. And now we can see the fruits of everyone's involvement, so many people involved in the hard work getting up to this point. But now we'll see in the coming months how well and how good it's going to be for Louisiana County and our big park.
Thank you, Mrs. Group, for all your hard work on the project.
Yeah,
how long?
Sure. We expect to have it finished late summer, early fall.
Wow.
I think it's a 9 month. Well, actually now that it's March, well, you'd be looking at the end of the year.
Certainly. Thank you very much. Good note, tab N. Appointment to the Youth Advisory Council student representative position.
So in this case, there's just a vacancy, and one applicant is showing interest in this, and Ron Hill's application, you can see up here on the screen, has been applied for a seat on the Youth Advisory Council.
I'd like to make a motion and thank Ron Hill to do a good job. I move to appoint Ron Hill to the Youth Advisory Council representative position with a term to begin January 15, 2013 and to terminate January 14, 2015.
Your second. Motion made by Mrs. Booker, seconded by Mr. Ellenbrock. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Moving on to tab MC, appointment to the Park and Recreation Advisory Board at-large position. Mr. Nichols.
Similar in this case, we have a vacancy requesting Ms. Amy Reese, but there are two candidates, Mr. Scott Sudmore and Mr. Jerry Perry. And so you've got applications for both of those two candidates.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move to appoint Scott Sudmore to the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board for the term to begin immediately and to terminate June 30th, 2013.
Second. Second. Mr.
motion made by Mr. Chester, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
My question, I'm sorry, Mr. Bishop. I said it said terminated June 30th, 2013. That's just a few months.
That's going to be on the same.
And we're still going to have to reappoint again?
Yes, sir, correct. I think in all of ours, ours only get, when you're filling a vacancy, someone who's in, it only goes to the end of their term.
All right, the closest are action matters. Moving on to presentations, County Commissioners, request we move tab O, 12, Planning Department, Planning Development Committee Report. Mr. Tupper.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This item is the 2012 Development Activity Report, and I'm pleased to present that to you today. As you know, it is the Planning Department's annual development-related activity report that allows us to measure development-related activities, various permits, building permits, and so forth. It models the county's comprehensive plan that was adopted in 2009, and so continues to influence growth and development within the county. We did see 77 building permits for new homes in 2012. That is represents a 14.9% increase from the 67 that were approved or issued in 2011. 34 of those were issued within the designated growth areas and 43 within the rural areas. 26 new lots were approved in 2012, and that's an 18.2% increase from the 22 in 2011. 11 of those were in designated growth areas, and 15 were in the rural areas. Most of the new lots that were approved in the rural areas represent family subdivisions. We do continue to receive a fair number of family subdivisions in the county. Moving on to site development plans, we saw and reviewed 19 site development plans last year. That represents an 18.8% increase from the 16 that we reviewed in 2011. And I do believe that's the most site plans we've reviewed since 2001. Six or seven of those were major site development plans, which require Planning Commission review and approval. And approximately half of those site plans reviewed were located within designated growth areas of the county. Special use permits. We had 8 special use permits that were reviewed last year. That's roughly a 33% increase from the 6 that we reviewed in 2011. All of those special use permits were located outside of designated growth areas. We reviewed 2 rezoning applications last year. One of those was actually a proffer amendment for the landscaping business on 618 that was approved, and we have 1 pending application for the planned urban development that was submitted in July of last year that is still pending. And 3 rezoning text amendments were approved in 2012. We saw no variances. We haven't received a variance application since March of 2010. Code compliance, 8 complaints were investigated last year, and that's roughly a 65% decrease from the 23 complaints investigated in 2011. 6 of the cases were initiated in 2012, were resolved, and 2 are still pending resolution. I will say that we have seen a slight uptick in zoning complaints we've received so far here in 2013. I think it's about 4 cases so far. So, land conservation, there are 19 AFD districts in the county. Agriculture and forestal districts represents a little over 18,000 acres or 9.8% of Fluvanna County. AFD enrollment did decrease approximately 570 acres last year, so it's down just slightly. 1 new conservation easement totaling 79.7 acres was recorded last year. And I'd also like to credit Andrew Pompey for his vast contribution to this report. In the midst of everything he was tying up prior to his departure, he also managed to bang this out. So I just wanted to represent Andrew here today in front of the board. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Questions from the board. Very quickly, Mr. Tupper.
that we had had some board conversation, and maybe this isn't quite germane, but for the Zion's Crossroads area, there have been some board conversation about potentially doing a memorial session, something that affected, that identified precisely what we want and how we want that area to go ahead and develop. Mrs. Booker has been mentioning that for some time now. I think that's something we probably want to be able to address, not in the immediate future, but certainly in the near future. Is that something that we might be able to put together?
Yes, that is on our work program, and you will see that in the near future.
Excellent. Very good. Very good. I have another question. Question
for the board? Sycamore Square has not been much built up.
Well, there's four phases. Right now, they're developing the fourth phase, and so there are quite a number of unimproved building lots in there, but quite also a few recorded building lots. So it's not built out, but it has the potential to, you see a lot more rooftops in there before it is built out. Yes, sir. That is at the end of the road, Justin Drive extended.
Looking at the mass residential activity subdivision, looking at from 2001 to 2012, that's page 24, that's 36 of 177. Does that mean that we're getting it right now and we're not putting things in rural conservation like we were?
Well, I think generally we. Yes, ma'am. I think generally the county in the last 2 years, we haven't had any major subdivision. Correct. And currently, a subdivision 6 lots or greater is considered a major subdivision, and they would have to cluster in the rural areas, either rural preservation or rural residential. So we just haven't seen application for a major subdivision recently.
But I think the statistics show that there's more activity in the areas of the growth areas.
Rural residential, yes. We do see more applications for subdivisions in rural residential and not rural preservation.
I know that Sean talked about a work session on Zion Crossroads. I think it's probably made for something more than that. When we talk about growth areas, we should really know what we're going to do about growth areas, what makes it attractive, and what promote development in those areas rather than other areas. It costs us more when we have development in the other areas. It costs us more in all the other services, education, buses, fire and rescue, and so on. So we really should find a way to promote those development areas. And I'd say the highest priority right now seems to be Zion. Maybe the next one is Palm Harbor.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Moving on to tab N, FY14 Budget and Capital Improvements Plan. Mr. Nichols.
These slides, you don't have these slides in the package, but they're really kind of part and parcel of the budget, but then go through a few of these, and then I'll give you the budget exhibits, and then we can drill down on any question or any area that you have to go forward. So a couple of things. This is what we looked at, and the reason I wanted the way I wanted the budget development process from a county administrator's perspective to go is a really great review of all these budget areas. We had great cooperation from the constitutional officers, the agency heads, and department heads, and we scrubbed very hard, and you'll see the results in this. But we also wanted to, every time we looked at money, is to find out whether or not we could target improvements in service efficiency and effectiveness with these taxpayer dollars that we've been given use of. And so all the budget deliberations we're looking at on trying to find ways to improve that area too. And then the two final things, I tried to make sure that we could look at a review and update our staff pay and benefits plans. There haven't been any staff pay raises or general pay raises or cost of living allowances since 2008. And plus we haven't paid as much attention to maybe we should have to staff training and development. And staff training and development is actually is a very low cost item, but pays a big difference for staff in their ability to do the job here, but also to prepare them if they've done a good job here, when they leave our employment, they'll be better off than when they got here to begin with. And so we try to put some dollars into different department budgets to make sure we can do reasonable staff training and development. And I don't mean the six-day trip to Tahiti for a basket weaving class. I do mean be things that are lower cost but still good and important, whether it's the professional associations or whether it's a one-day training class or it's an internet class or something like that. Things that are related to our jobs that help us do a better job of things we try to put in the dollars for those types of items. In this budget, you'll see that the budget totals about $65 million, but it's based on a real property tax rate of 79 cents per 100 of assessed item, and that would result in, if that's adopted by the board, you know, decrease for the average homeowner. Would actually increase taxes on public utilities because they're not subject to the bar assessment. For the homeowners in that county, it would be a tax decrease because the equalized rate is 81.4. 22 of the 42 budget areas where we looked at have reduced budgets. Another four had unchanged budgets. Another few had increased budgets, and we can identify all those. And what we're trying to do is make sure that while we're reducing, we still focus on efficient service delivery and then try to stay tied to important things that would help with staff development training and appropriate pay patterns for our staff. This is just a brief look at revenues and how they break out, expenditures and how they break out. There are dozens and literally dozens of ways you can break this out and frame it. You can look at it lots of different ways. But this is just a pretty simple way to look at our property and our revenues and where the revenues come from to build our budget. And then what we spend our money on is accounting. You can see on the next slide a similar thing. This looks just at revenues, but it looks at revenues for fiscal year 2013 and then revenues for fiscal year 2014 by the source of that revenue. And then on expenditures, the same thing. Fiscal year 2013 compared to fiscal year 2014, and then where those expenditures go into what the budget lines. We want big budget moves. And so there are a couple of specific things in there. I did put in a pay adjustment proposal. The pay adjustment proposal, while it's going to, I'm positive, create some questions because people will wonder, well, that person got 4%, this person got 2%. It's based on a lot of work that has been done in looking at comparable salaries throughout the region. And I'll show you in the next slide what that involves. But my proposal involves a 5% of cost of living for people that are 20% or more below the comparable salaries for the area. And then decreasing scale down. Essentially, it's a 2% cost of living for staff, but then it's some targeted raises for those that are farthest away from comparable salaries. And I did try to target those that are in very low wage positions, but as long as the comps show that they should not be in, they should, that the comparables were higher, then we try to target those positions too, focusing especially on those who are less than $12 per hour. The comparable salaries that we looked at were from extensive range. There was a Springstead salary survey that the county used before the commission, and we have those results. The Gale Parish Ranger Manager contacted these additional counties about some specific jobs to try to get comps. And then you can see these current pay schedules we got from all these different areas and try to use to make sure that this job position is compared to multiple job positions of the same type in other localities. And then we threw out the highs, threw out the lows, did a weighted average in the middle, and then compared that to where we're at. And I'll tell you that that's not a perfect system in every case. And also, our salaries relative to the comps are still in better shape than they look in better shape than they actually are, because almost all those comps do not include the 5% VRS plus up that we did last year. So if you went back down to the 5% below, our comps would actually fall farther away from, our salaries would fall farther away from the comparables. So that's why I proposed this plan of a graduated look at the salaries in comparison to colleagues around the area. I would not be trying to propose something where we'd be the highest paid employer in the area. I would not want to be the lowest paid employer. I'd like to be competitive. And that's what the plan tries to do, is to get some reasonable competitive salaries. And it doesn't catch up all at once because it's just too difficult to catch up in 1 year. So this would be a phased approach. And if you look at this kind of plan, this could be a similar plan for future years, using similar types of studies. Maybe next year is 2-2-1-1. Maybe it's 1-1-1 all the way down. Maybe whatever it happens to be, maybe it's 10-5-4-2. It could be any combination of that, but it depends on what we can afford as a county and what we try to make sure
I look forward to the county employee health insurance. This is just the beginning of a much longer look. You know that I came from background as a healthcare executive for many years, and this is a slightly editorial, but I'm very worried about what the face of healthcare is going to look like in coming years. While I believe in many of the basic tenets of the Affordable Care Act that's coming, it's a really important thing to provide health coverage for folks. A report I heard a couple weeks ago that talked about, of all things, breast pumps for breastfeeding moms. Now, under the Affordable Care Act, as of this January 1st of 2013, they're now free. And the report interviewed many women, and some of the women were asked, well, are you going to get one? Well, yes, I've got one, but mine's an older one. I'm going to get another because it's free. And another lady said, well, mine is nice and still works just fine, but that new model, that's really, really good. I'm going to get one because it's free. Another said, well, I don't have one, but might need to have one around. I'm going to get one because it's free. And that's the three lines that I told you. It's not free, it's not free, it's not free. Somebody is paying for it. And I don't mean that that's not a good thing. You know, like if I were a young father and my wife chose to breastfeed, I think that would be a good thing. I think it's a family decision, but it is certainly some medical evidence behind it. But the cost increases that go with expanding health plans, like Medicare years ago, that was expected to go on this slope, and now is on this slope, and a whole variety of other things, makes me worry about our ability to pay for a good, robust healthcare benefit as a county for our employees in the future. One of the ways to address that is to find what best plan we can use for their benefit and for the cost benefit for taxpayers that have to fund part of that. And we need to be able to moderate cost increases in our budget, not this year, but over the course of the next 3 or 4 or 5 years. We have to have a plan in place to be able to address that so that our costs look like they're going down, even though when the cost increase goes up next year, then we can pick up part of it so the employees don't get stuck with everything all the time, because I believe the cost increases in healthcare are going to be very high. This year, we're expecting a 10% increase on the plan that we have, and the local choice. That's a very modest increase. 10% sounds terrible, but in the healthcare world of insurance, 10% is pretty modest. And even that is a big difference on someone's paycheck when you cost on a $20,000 health plan. So we have an ongoing review of many options. I had 8 or 10 sessions with staff in the last week, inviting all staff members to come in and sit down and talk about pay plans and about health benefits. Got lots of great feedback. At least they're informed of what the proposal is that's coming to the board. And that will be an ongoing thing, because we're going to have to really look at this hard and figure out, over your approach, how we can still continue to offer a reasonable benefit but not break the bank at the same time, either the employees' banks or the taxpayers' banks. So the proposal for this year involves probably about a 10% increase in our existing health plan. We have Anthem Local Choice. It's a state program that was established by the state many years ago. There are some problems with the Anthem Local Choice plan from my perspective. It is a wonderful plan, great benefits, but because it is a wonderful plan with great benefits, it's pretty costly. It includes dental and vision coverage automatically in the plan. You don't have a choice to opt out for either one of those. And you can only offer three options for employees in our plan. In addition, most health insurance plans have a significantly different rate for employee plus spouse than they do for an employee plus child. Employee plus spouse is normally significantly more expensive than employee plus child. The Anthem Local Choice Plan does not offer that. It is employee plus one. And so that means last year, employees with spouses coming on this plan had a significant decrease in cost. Employers with one child had a significant increase in cost. And we can't do anything about that. The plan is as it's offered. We don't have a choice. We can only offer three options, and employee plus one is just employee plus one. But my proposal for this next year would be to drop our Key Advantage 250. It's the most expensive plan that's offered. While that's a very low deductible, and that's very nice, it is a very high out-of-pocket, out-of-paycheck pocket premium, and therefore that's the one that automatically comes out of everyone's paycheck, whether they want to or not. You have some choice on when you go to a doctor or to health care, when you pay deductibles, but you would have no choice on what comes out of your paycheck. My suggestion would be retain the Key Advantage 500 and offer, in place of the 250, a Key Advantage 1000. That would certainly be a higher deductible, but you'll see that we can help moderate this 10% increase in cost by offering different plans that
people then can sit down with Gail Parrish, our HR manager, and with our benefits advisors, and find out what they can reasonably afford and what's best for their family, what needs their family needs the best. We've done literally dozens of scenarios trying to cost this out. The current plan, as I would propose for next year, would set a defined contribution of $6,000, $9,000, or $12,000, depending on whether you're employee-only, employee plus one, or employee plus family. All three of those numbers are lower than what we pay this year, but we have to try to moderate it in some way to be able to prepare for the potential cost increases. And if you're a new employee, I would suggest that they can't be on this grandfathered plan. This one, this is what I would suggest for new employees, 8, 10, or 12. That gets us towards a percentage that I think is more reasonable for the county. I would like to see Urbana County offer near 100% coverage for an employee plan. I'd like to see us offer near two-thirds coverage for an employee plus one plan. I'd like to see us offer near 50% coverage for an employee plus family plan. If you use that graduated step of 8, 9, or 10, that achieves that percentage, exactly to those percentages. My real preference, long term, would be to a defined standard benefit regardless of which plan you choose. When you hire an employee, not a family, and I'm not suggesting that families aren't important, that we don't have some responsibility to provide a good benefit, but it would be much simpler long term to cost for it if it said the defined benefit is up to $9,000 or $9,500 or $8,500, whatever it is. But to do that in a single year would be catastrophically hard on the people that are on family plans now. It would be really good for people that are on employee-only plans, and that's the bulk of our people, of our staff. But I can show you, as sit down with you, I can go through spreadsheets with you to show you the alternatives and options. But this is going to require some more work. The other things that are kind of stewing is, this is Keller, the school superintendent, I and her staff and our staff have been working to see if there's some way we can get choice, maybe the same plan, where we can get the benefit of a bigger group, but not be on a self-insured plan. We're not on a self-insured plan this year, but the school still is, and if we can find a plan that meets broader needs, maybe we can make a little bit of benefit for everyone across taxpayer-funded positions in that county. And finally, on this plan, two final things. I would propose that if an employee chooses not to take our health plan and they can show us evidence of coverage elsewhere, because we're going to be required to either provide coverage or make sure someone has coverage under the Affordable Care Act, I would propose that we offer a $1,200 stipend. I would much prefer to make it higher than that. I'd much prefer to make it $2,400 or $3,600 or something like that, $150 a payday. This ends up being $50 a payday. But if you take an employee and they find that their spouse's plan is a better alternative to them, and with the $1,200 stipend, that helps encourage them to use their spouse's plan and not our plan, what would a taxpayer for Urbana County rather pay, the $12,000 towards the health plan or $1,200 in stipend? Now that's not unique and not new, but it's not universal in every corporation now. It is a way to help us better support our employees over time and moderate our costs. And I'd like to see higher time like this go forward, phased in over a number of years, 2 or 3 or 4 years, so we can minimize the today impact on employees, but also moderate the impact on the economy, because the world of healthcare is not going to get cheaper. It is the one absolute fact that I'm positive of. And after 40 years in healthcare, I at least have a lot of experience to base it on. So, now, the final plan, while the plan you'll see today, this plan that you see on the screen, is actually a little bit of a cost savings for Urbana County this year. We really need to look at it as a phased approach and find out what we're going to do next year, and next year, and next year. But we have to really dig down and find out whether anthropomorphic choice is the plan we're going to stay on, or if there's another plan that can be better for our employees and better for costs. And I'm just not positive that we can get it done between now and July. There's a lot of work that goes into doing this, and a lot of meetings that have to happen, a lot of changes. And I don't want to be rushing this onto our staff members at the last second. So it takes a deliberative process. We are working on it, but there are many deliberative processes going on right now, and there's so many staff to do. But staff have had an opportunity to see this plan. They've heard the same exact talk that I just talked to you about. They've heard all the same information from me. And while it's not necessarily a great pill to swallow because there are some cost increases, it's a way for us to get a handle on healthcare costs and to be able to continue to offer a good, robust health plan in the future. Any questions on health insurance part along? I know that's a lot. Okay, and then on the capital projects funded here, we do maintain the managed reserves for both county and schools. We've actually adjusted those numbers slightly just to round them off to make them easier to kind of target the state we want to focus on. There are monies in here on an ongoing basis for sheriff's vehicles and school buses in the reserves. And we have a number of items that are on the funding request that will show you those and answer questions about them. Largely, this is in line with what the Planning Commission has set forward. There are a couple of changes that I recommend on that, and we'll show you those. But then it also looks at some school projects and renovations for Perrysburg Upper Elementary, some significant things that need to be done there. Some additional bus funding. You heard last year, and you're well aware of how old and aging our buses are, how far we are behind on the bus curve. So there's additional funding in there. Not additional as in, like, way bigger dollars from last year, but the continuing additional funding above that baseline. And then this also includes a wedge in there, dollars in there for potential units for the school system. Now, I know Mrs. Keller and I and our staff have been working on trying to get a demo in for the schools, and I think maybe this month there's a demo team coming in to meet with the schools to go through and lay out what units looks like in the school capacity, and then we can get some feedback from schools, from school teachers and our staff. And so my plan for today, and remember this is my first county administrator's budget, so you can treat this however you want, but I would expect this to be kind of a basic overview. I'll go through the budget, lay out the numbers, should we get it. I can answer detailed questions if you like. We can drill down on any subject area because we haven't heard the links. If you'd like to go answer those questions, we get some things answered and taken care of, asked and answered now. But I'd also like to be able to collect information from all of you so that we've got answers before the next time we meet, or the next time we meet, or the next time we meet. I don't want to have to ask the same question two or three times. And so if you've got questions that we're going to need to go research, we can get those answers back to you before the next time we have a meeting. And if we have one next Wednesday or the following Wednesday, and you've got revenues and expenditures and agency briefs, I think, for the chief next Wednesday. The following Wednesday is the work session at school. And so anything you pick out on here that you want us to bring interest to, we'll get them back to you as soon as possible if we cannot answer this today. And then we can look at CIP, and then the entire budget package that was on ShareFile for all of you is available so we can drill down in any area. These three documents will be loaded immediately following this meeting to the website so that the community can get to them. The hard copies we've got in the room cover these first two things, but the package itself, the big package, is binding work. So that will be on the website, we can get to details as well. Those will be loaded immediately following this meeting. So if that's acceptable, I'll start up with the budget summary and go where we want to come to that.
I have one question for you. The summary, so we're talking about the summary of the county, this for county staff or for all county staff, excluding school?
Not including school or excluding school?
Excluding school.
This is all county staff. Every person is paid by the Fidelity County government, not the Fidelity County School System. And the schools will present their own plan on how they do it. And so I only looked at the 150 or 60 or so Fidelity County government side employees, including the constitutional officer staff, social services, the agencies, and then all regular staff, but does not include school staff.
How did that affect the Sheriff's Department?
Sheriff's Department is, I know that you've been given some things from the sheriff and looked at targeted things, but Sheriff and I have worked. I think our wives are mad at us because we had a lot of late night phone calls and a lot of meetings to go through that in detail, like I have with some other groups. And his folks essentially are in here the same kind of way. We tried to tie their accounts to the other area. We did a very careful salary survey with those two. And while there are some targeted raises for different positions across the spectrum, the sheriff and I have an agreed number that's in there for all of his personnel as well.
Including the education.
No, the education stipends, I'll show you when we get to the sheriff's budget. I did not concur with those, not because I don't think it's a reasonable thing. I can give you 10 reasons why.
I'm just asking if they're in
there. If they're not in the county administrator's recommended budget, but they are on his spreadsheet, it'll show you where they are as budget.
Got it. Yeah. That includes the library?
pay plan includes every single person that is paid by Savannah County government, whether it's the agency, the constitutional officer staff, or regular staff, so the library, social services, all the constitutional officers, the registrar's office, all of our regular department heads and staff, through the entire area. It's 168 people or something like that.
The agency
How much do we have in the fund balance? That was one you've been answering today.
Well, it's the same exact number we gave you just after the revision.
Well, it's two numbers. One was 8.2 and the other was like 10 something.
We have 10.3 unassigned, with the policy requirement being about 7.2.
And what is our debt now? Total debt.
Total debt is approximately $99 million.
Well, now, one time it's 92. If we've gone down to 92, then one time it's like 102. So now we're at 91?
Approximately 99. That's the entire, including utilities, debt, everything.
How did that go from 92 to 99?
Because when we issued, when we refunded debt, we actually issued more debt to replace. We refunded $55 million with $66 million, and it's still a savings.
That was the resolution you agreed a couple weeks ago, a couple meetings ago, just to make sure that the budget reflected that.
Another point, sort of a good time to do it. When the prior board raised the personal property tax rate to $4.15, that was 2 years ago. Since then, our personal property tax revenues have dropped. They have not increased. And there's obvious reasons for that. And we sort of priced ourselves out of the county market, surrounding county market, when we did that. And facts, people are moving their large amounts of vehicles, high-priced vehicles, out of the county to outside counties that are one-fourth of what our personal property taxes are. So 2 years ago, we shot ourselves in the foot by not raising property taxes and hiding real estate taxes and hiding the revenue increase in personal property taxes. That board actually shot us in the foot. We're realizing less revenue now by that move. Instead of being honest to the public and showing you where the money was going, it was sort of tucked in the back of it. When you see your real estate taxes don't go up, you really don't notice your personal property taxes until you get your tax bill twice a year. And even at that point, very few of us can read it and understand why our car is worth more than we traded in. And we just paid the bill. At the end of the day, the people that do understand it are the large vehicle owners, the landscapers, the construction companies, the haulers, the tree haulers, that have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousand dollars worth of vehicles that decided to move into the province in Albemarle County and Louisa County to pay a quarter of what they're paying now. So at the end of the day, it's costing us a bucket of money as opposed to being honest 2 years ago and we would have realized an increase in that revenue. I just want to make that clear. Mr. Nichols has that figure. It's a drop in revenue. I mean, when you're raising something 40%, you expect an increase in revenue. Well, it's a net drop in revenues from where we ended at $3.85. You were part of that board.
Well, there's two things here as well. One, there is a correlation that doesn't apply causality. There's a little thing called a recession happening between there, and a lot of people do get rid of their vehicles and whatnot. The other thing too is that when you have Louisa at about 90, there's nothing that you're going to be able to do.
I
can't direct
progress
of the planet. You've got to be able to go back to Louisa County and say, okay, we need to drop our rates to about 90. Now, if that's a course of action you'd like to take, by all means.
You have
but if it's not a course of action you'd like to take, and I'm just pointing at the problem and cussing at it, well, then
all I'm doing is being constructive, and we shouldn't be looking at that number any further for two reasons. One, honesty and taxation, because it's a good place to hide revenue out of the public eye. In other words, it's not going to real estate value.
Maybe we should be looking at that land use system.
There's a lot of things you could be looking at. And you're not going to get an argument from me on that.
Mr. Alton, in favor of land use taxation.
Yeah. I'm in favor of being fair.
I just want to know how much you
fair,
right?
How much should we lose this? How much are we down from FY11 to FY13?
I don't know if we've got to get to that level on this one. I don't like, but we've got three full numbers for it to show you what any changes will be in the 415 rate, what it would affect on the budget for revenues or expenditures, and what the historical rates are, and maybe you can enter the collection. Mr. Sheridan or Ms. McLennan, I would say, Mr. Sheridan, Mr. Leonard may be able to tell you some other numbers as well.
My only point in this exercise is that's probably not something we should be able to address.
Yeah. Is that his next question? So why we bring it up?
Probably not because it's a good time.
I can tell you that I toyed with when we played with some numbers, plugging something in besides 415. Mm-hmm. But in the end, I decided that that's not really the county administrator's job to adjust the tax rates too much on things that were set by the board on personal property.
So you have get us that information.
So I can go down through the list of any items that you have questions on. I'll let me just show you a couple of examples because the reminders are set up this way. If you click on any of these, it'll pull up a spreadsheet. Anything marked in green is what whoever that person that came to present their budget and I agreed on, and then the total dollar value down at the bottom is what went into the county administrator's budget. Your spreadsheets are set up the same way. You've got a detail sheet for every budget area, and then, so the details for each breakdown. Again, what has not been changed is at the top in the salaries. We didn't apply the salary numbers to every department yet because it's still in the wedge in the budget. If there's anything disagreed upon or you have questions about, for instance, on the sheriff's budget, he's requesting some additional personnel, and so they're marked in red on there. They were not included in the county administrator budget dollars, and then the educational stipend we talked about and the master deputy stipend I've got there in red as well. The field training stipend that he asked for, I did put it.
You did put it.
The field training stipend, yes. You've got field training stipend, educational stipend, and master deputy stipend. Only things in green are included in the dollar value in the 79-cent budget. Things in red are in addition, and you have to be justified or supported by the and that's just an example. I just target the sheriff because he's not here. Just target the sheriff because we've talked a lot about this. I found out about this and I know he's only got one bullet in his pocket.
But he has two people in the room, so they're...
Yeah. Anyway,
I'm actually here. He just was sitting down watching.
Don't let him talk. It's not his talk. Anyway, there's not too many areas that weren't agreed upon, but anytime there were, we marked those and highlighted them so that you could take a look at those. It's just areas that I didn't agree with. Not because I didn't necessarily think it was other than a useful plan, but because I didn't.
But you don't have to battle.
I can't justify everyone's budget.
Can I ask you something about school? School fund local. You started off with adopted budget of 12,521,740. Right. Amended budget 13,537,913. Do you have the items that were put in there? You just pulled up. I know they weren't here.
But any time there was be on a spreadsheet because it'll print out that way. We can pull any of those and show you exactly where the trail is for each item, regardless of what kind of area it is. So if there's anything special, the trail is listed there.
Okay. And then you came up.
You can see Mr. Dahl did a really good job because he put trails online.
So then you came up with the budget FY14 at 13,000,002,03394, which is a decrease of 3%.
It's a decrease counting the 600 that we gave to open high school and the 300,000 from a few months ago.
Increase. What the board directed was the baseline would be 12.2 for this year.
Right.
And I made the decision to put excess of revenues over expenditures against a line that I hadn't touched yet. And everything else had been filled in to my satisfaction based on building the budget. The excess was placed there.
So
when was that?
Last week. And again, I understand your point. You saw a different budget. You saw a budget that had the excess of revenues over expenditures in draft form up in the top line, that red line up the top.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And then Mrs. Booker saw the same the next day. Weaver and Mr. Chester saw a different one because we'd updated by then. Mr. Kenny saw a different one the following day. And then when I finished the budget process, put it in there, I got comments from all five of you, but I set it up.
Okay.
I guess also I'm wondering about the revenue, and I mentioned that before, was the use of the fund balance, $2,337,000.
So, the use of fund balance is for CIP projects, and that's just because that's traditionally how they've been funded. Some of the reserve accounts are actually funded by operating revenues, but all the other fund projects, and you can see it better when we look at the CIP, but we put fund balance just because that's what we've traditionally been doing. I mean, there are other options. When there were other options like proffers or grants, we put that in. And then the only other option is borrowing. So basically it funds the CIP project.
So that reduces the fund balance.
Correct.
Down to 8-something.
Correct. And in another one of the workshops, I'll show you where we would end if we were to adopt it in this manner.
Next Wednesday, when we go through revenues and expenditures, we'll have much more detail about all those areas and show you. What I'm really hoping today, I'm certainly asking any questions, but I'm really hoping that this will kind of target you to ask these kinds of questions and get us prepared so that we can have as complete a picture before next week's meeting as possible so that we can ask any other additional questions. In that case, we'll certainly be drilling down much deeper on revenues and expenditures for you. Looking forward to next week's meetings.
Well, I actually believe that the meetings we had were very helpful to us because we spent 4 hours here.
Yeah.
And you explained it in detail. One of actually some of us just reviewed for us. But with RIT, so the ones in pink would be are if that's what you the figure we have is what you're recommending.
Yes, the figure that's clear there is what's built into the budget. The sheriff's dollar value recommended for that budget is 2.307, and that's what's listed, and that's included in the 79-cent rate. If you actually go look at the sheriff's budget exhibit, all the things in green on there and then in your packages total up to this 2.307, and that's what I put in the budget. The differences in here are included in anything that was in pink. So their baseline budget. That was last year's budget with anything stripped out that was one-time special programs, things like that. That was what I asked them to do for baseline. And I asked them in baseline plus to put in whatever the new starts, new programs, changes in personnel. In this case, the sheriff has asked for 2 sheriff's deputies and 2 part-time bailiffs. And then this is the personnel costs that are associated with that. He's also asked for some educational stipends for personnel based on comparison with other departments and some money set aside for the Master Deputy Program, so that if deputies achieve that Master Deputy status, the board had already agreed that
that, like the career development plan for other constitutional officers, if the master deputy program goes in place, there would be stipend money associated with that if someone achieves that career status, like we have done in other constitutional officer roles. But because those are new program starts, I was, frankly, more concerned with trying to fund what we have already and give adequate attention to pay and benefits for existing staff based on the 5-year gap since the last time we've done that. And I didn't think it's, I don't disagree with the sheriff's request for additional personnel. I just didn't think I could afford it in the budget I was proposing. And so if the sheriff wants to justify those, and certainly he and I have talked, and anyone else that has a pink box on there, a red box, we've had that discussion. They know that when they present to the board, they'll need to put in a rational justification of trying to get those additional things. I didn't include your money.
Well, we're going to have time in the work session to break these down one at a time.
Time is the board when the constitutional officers have to present the board to.
So, this is a synopsis of your budget. We have time to break it down into detail.
Without question, but I've already broken it down in detail. If you've got some specific areas you want to target to raise up or lower down, it's fine. But remember, what you're going to look at in the future is you're going to look at agencies, nonprofits, and constitutional officers. So I would focus on county places right now if you want to target some of those areas, because I can answer those questions. There are no pinks in any of the county areas.
It wasn't entirely from fund balance, but part of it.
Right.
but he's still included in it.
It's included in the 79 cents.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, it's included in the baseline budget, and it's included in the 79 cents. The only fund balance withdrawals here are related to CFP.
Right.
We'll show you the CFP separately, but the only time we tapped fund balance was based on kind of an historical precedent of how we use our CFP dollar, how we fund CFP.
Yeah, that was some of what I'm...
And I'll be pleased to go through the CIP here, but too, the good thing about the CIP is that Mr. Dahl's got a really nice layout that's very easy to follow compared to our previous versions that show in the current year cash
operating cash versus fund balance.
Versus fund balance cash, and then fund balance, grants, and other sources by the year, so you can see the full layout in the year, and you can see what tails there are in out years. But the new one that is actually on guides too is a much easier display to understand and follow, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, I see where it's happening.
Okay. And again, on any of these, we'll be glad to sit down with any of you individually or in groups of two to go through in detail anytime you want to do that between meetings. But whatever's convenient for you. Now, just so you know, the red blocks that were out of the pink blocks, the note is out of the slide, so you'll see that on the screen. These are personnel requests, personnel precinct expansions, personnel requests, group requests. That's the things that we're thinking on those specific budgets.
Okay.
Any further questions in this
board? Well, for the CIP?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
So now, we can't look at more than really one column at a time on here, but everyone's got the same sheet in front of them. What you see is your big sheet that you've got in the audience of what the two ones have in your mind is on this screen. You can see that the layout's a little different now. Operating cash, fund balance cash, grants, coffers, borrowing, or other sources like fundraising from citizens, things like that. So the items that I've included in the fiscal year 2014 proposed CIP are $3.4 million worth, and you can see which column those dollars are in. First two items are the items that are on an ongoing basis. We adjusted those numbers slightly. They were like 152 or 152614 or some odd number. Who's running off?
And just to be clear, those are operational, so we're not talking about pulling that out of the general fund, is that correct?
These are an operating budget. Okay. They're in cash, but as on an ongoing basis.
Yes.
They're just set aside. Instead of putting in some of the budget, you just held it here with a little restrictions on how to access that. Those requests come through the board, and frankly, I'm glad you all did, but I'm also pleased the way it's worked so far this year. While there are sometimes disputes on what want to fund out of there, not fund out of there, it still is a pretty clean process and gives lots of visibility. And then your monthly reports, you always see what's been withdrawn from there based on your approvals. But yes, that comes out of operating cash out of this budget. The additional maintenance module training, that's a brand new item. We didn't have that in the capital reserve before. Because it's a big rock expense, because it's a limited expense, it's not like something you're going to pay $10,000 every year to do on a recurring basis. We really think that there are lots of ways to use MUNIS much different than we are. It's hard to swallow all at one time. Just getting over the hump of training for what we've got now is hard enough. But building inspections, all their work should be in MUNIS. The Commissioner of Revenue's office, it'd be really nice if that module worked well for he and the staff, then we wouldn't have to pay separately to the camera system through and whatever company is. We don't know if that'll work, but we try to put a wedge in here to be able to cover those kinds of additional enhancements to the meter system, since it's a pretty robust system. The amphitheater we talked about before, $5,000 would be coming from county, but $46,000 we'd be trying to target out of grant money. We approved the first effort of that last meeting.
It was good to hear Linda talk about the MUNIS and the fact that it put in terminals in other places. The sheriff's office, library, maybe other places where money's collected, so you only have to collect the transaction, move the transaction from the account.
It would be a significant improvement if we can get the same agreement to do credit cards. We're going to be jumping and going fast. We are working really hard with our office to try to make that happen. It's great if we could have, do that in the Parks and Rec office or other places where fines are paid or credit cards paid. And with the credit card issue, that too is going to be really to the help of the citizens.
So the $25,000 has that stuff. Is that $25,000 for that, or is it something?
Well, it would be to expand specifically training, but also if there's a module you have to buy that we don't have, in that case you wouldn't need the module, but if you're going to expand building inspection or public works, for instance, none of our building maintenance things are in there yet, the cost for that, but it can be in units, so it includes both of those things. The expansion of system use and improved modules that would be tied as one together with our contract. Makes a bunch easier on the budget.
Do we have
a proper, in our grubby little hands?
Yeah, in our bank.
Yes, ma'am, we do. If you look at the bottom of the sheet, there are three sets of proper money out there. Two of them we have. That's the blue right down at the bottom, the single-family homes that was in phase 1, 2, and 3, $111,000. The villas phase 2 was actually $141,000 or $42,000 or whatever it was, but we've already taken $45,000 out of that. We took $45,000 out of that. Set aside for the generator for Lake Montchell Fire and Rescue. So the $69,000 is there. What we do not have in our hands yet is the phase, the late phase 2, the $84,000 that we've come from that phase of the 6-4 square plan. So the red and the blue are dollars that are available today, and so you'll see coming down the side here where the red and blue dots are, these are things that would be subject to that profit money that the board could take action to use that profit money for those kind of things. My recommendation would be to use it on school projects down here, like the need to put in an elementary school playground in Carysbrook Upper Elementary, and the carpet. Schools had requested $100,000 for carpet upgrades, and that was in an out year. I split that up with $50,000 in two different years, and again, I don't think that would be a reasonable place to look at profit money because it's. Some of the proper money is tied to specific kinds of things. You can't use it for other stuff. So the schools and or some of the investment in schools and counties see that deal.
That $50,000 in carpet money, that's been in there for years and years and years. Now, maybe it skips stuff. But it looks to me like they could do something, get something more permanent, make some changes there. Because it seems like along the way there's some wasted money.
Could be, but I don't know how much money we spent on carpet before. But from my perspective, need to be carpeted and need to be carpeted in place. But that's the question best asked to my colleague.
Is $50,000 in next year going to be enough?
$20,000 should throw at the CIP. And I don't think that's appropriate. I think
when it talks about capital improvements, I think you have to look at the kinds of things that are capital improvements rather than stuff that is more reasonably aligned, in my view, in operating budgets. And then we have to fund those things if we believe that it has to be done. But anyway, that would take a while for us to discuss further.
So the 575 for Science Crossroads sewer system and construction of water and sewer come from fund balance.
Indeed.
So if we don't do anything this year,
the fund balance doesn't decrease by that amount. Or you could pay something else with that fund balance amount, but yes. If it's not approved or we didn't do it, it doesn't come out of fund balance, it stays in the bank account.
What are you going to do with the, where's the $3,100,000 coming into next year, then what's your plans there?
Well, that's in cash, it's not fund balance.
Right? Yeah, but well, cash.
Right, are you talking a six cent tax increase to pay for?
Cash in out years is not determined. Cash in out years could be budget and or fund balance. Because we're not there yet, because this is a projected plan for the only one we're budgeting for is in the current year. Next year, you'll see that pink column split out in two columns, both pink and yellow. Cash out of budget, cash out of fund balance. And I don't know where it's going to come from. That's a discussion we'll have to have if a project gets approved to move over to the water plant. But you'll see that there are no yellow columns in
out years. And you may hear a point. Let's say, for instance, that gets approved in July. We better have decided by then how we're paying for it.
Indeed.
Whether it be from tax money, whether it be a bond, whether it be fund balance. I mean, we're not going to fall into the same thing we do with the school where we didn't know where the money was coming from.
If you lean towards that way, you will have options from the finance department. They'll tell you what the cost of all those different alternatives are, whether it's out of budget, what it would do to budget, whether it's out of fund balance, or whether it's out of bond issuances, or whatever.
We're
going to
run out of money.
Well, that's why I brought it up. I mean, if we make a decision, we're going to have to decide how we're going to pay for it without our fund balance taking a hit, because sequestration's coming up. We've got a lot of issues coming up. And we don't have a whole lot of money available. You just pointed out it's dropped a couple $1 million over the last year.
We need to have that.
No, that isn't going to help. And you don't tax people to build up the fund. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. I have another question. What was left over in the last fiscal year? Now, we know we gave the money back to the school system. What was left over on the town side? What was the residue
we had back to fund balance?
What was that?
It was small.
Well, I figured it was, but I was wondering that. And I know one department spent more than they were supposed to, but the rest of them had surpluses, and I wonder what that added up to.
Well, there was more than one department. Well, there was a little lower, a little longer, and stuff. But in total, Will, I was pulling the number. I because I'm not on the internet here, I can't tap that specific file, but it wasn't much. So we'll pull that into it.
I didn't think Farmer Cox gave a very good explanation when they went over that fiscal year with their audit. They didn't talk too much about it. That should have been one of the things that they brought out. That would have gone back in to the general fund.
This CIP is another one. We're just going to have a work session just to pick it. This is typical last year. Right now we're just generalizing. We've got to really focus on that and focus on a sustainable budget as opposed to looking at a $3 million increase next year.
Well, what are you going to do about education for everything that motion that you made some months back at $300,000 and then $650,000 alone? You know,
those figures, he jumped it up, whatever that was.
But that happened last week. That didn't happen.
Yeah, that's right.
It didn't happen 2 weeks ago.
It wasn't a motion, I think it was a statement.
Well, okay, it's a statement that they did.
And that was part of the motion.
Yeah.
But it wasn't recorded.
In other words, it wasn't true.
No, you made the motion, it was true.
The email.
See where it was.
We'll get to that.
It wasn't in.
But, good.
Well, it's just a confusion on that. Yeah, based on this vote to county commissioner's budget as of 13-2, which is about a million dollars.
Which was the amount that was given back to him, 650.
Which was a one-time thing.
Yeah.
And the 300,000, which was a one-time thing, turned into a FY14 thing. It didn't turn into a one-time.
Well, that needs to be resolved.
Well, we have to see what their...
We have to see what they're...
Yeah, well, that's true, too.
So it suggests we don't make any snap decisions yet.
Well, they're just saying they are now.
And that was my point 2 weeks ago.
Right?
Was that question?
That was where...
That's where we're at.
That's why county commissioner is required to put together a budget and present it for discussion.
Sure.
Which was...
Good job.
I understand one thing, but this is the budget I presented to you, and...
Whoa. It's not the budget you presented to me.
Is it?
No, it's not.
It is not the budget you presented.
The budget you've been presented in formal session.
This is a formal session.
So, I don't think it's helpful to...
Did you shake your head? Did you get the same preview budget that I got?
Yes, I...
No, you didn't.
But he gave me an explanation.
Were you...
Now he's giving you a formal budget. This is the formal budget he's giving you.
Were you aware that you didn't get the same money?
Not until you showed it to me.
Well, all you're doing is tweaking it so good from the first time up until the end. Is that correct?
I may serve the invite and in each meeting. This was what I wanted, was your feedback, so that I could then finalize my budget and present it to you on February 6th. I understand the next. I'll do better, learn better, know better next year. But I'm still going to present something on the county minister. I'm still going to present the county minister's budget at a formal public meeting, whatever day that is for next year.
I think it's all right, because sort of progression there as you see the changes that are necessary, and we wouldn't be here now if we didn't have that before, would we?
That's right. It would be as clear as the...
Would be as clear now if we just hit it right now for the first time. He's had the opportunity with our input, all of our input.
To be honest, this is 1,000 times better than we...
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean...
Tremendous job for me now.
You've seen me complain. This is a complaint.
Yes, I've seen you complain.
I'm not saying anything personal. This is... I want to hear the feedback. When I goof up on something or I don't make it what you want, fine. But as I said months ago, I'm responsible for, based on how I read the rules, I'm responsible for any fall budget on a certain day. I do that, and then discussion starts.
This is a fantastic start.
Staff worked very hard, and the constitutional officers, the ATTNs, and department heads did a lot of work on their part, too, to meet and do all this. But it's a good place to start the discussion, please.
Joe, I concur.
So that's really all that I was going to cover on those items. I'd be glad to answer any questions, any further questions, but what I would really, really hope is that before you got these sessions going up, whether it's a revenue and expenditure session, a school work session, or agencies, or nonprofits, look through the budget book. Anytime you want to talk on the phone or come in and sit down, we'd be glad to do that. If it's as long as it's groups of two or groups of three, as long as you're not asking any questions, we'll talk. But truly, anytime. So that by the time you get to the meeting, you won't have to ask, so many questions in the meeting to try to then figure out on the fly what to do next. We want to help you through that process on the front side. So please ask any questions you have at the time, and we'll be glad to provide pretty quick answers. Some of the stuff I just can't today, because some of the spreadsheets I can't pull unless I'm live.
Any good questions?
No. Pretty good. Moving on to the consent agenda. Is there any items that need to be pulled?
Second by Mr. Chesser. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Moving on to accounts payable, tab R. Accounts payable report.
Notice that report changed a little bit too, but it got condensed, so it's two ways. We're also numbered now, so you can go by round number.
I really like this now.
Let's go.
Well, number 400, page
95.
I didn't have our anything on this.
400. As far as Ravana gear and apparel?
Yeah, there's $4,439.75 for uniforms.
Youth basketball uniforms. Those are for youth basketball uniforms for the season, for the winter season.
And they pay you, I mean, that's part of what they pay for.
Exactly.
The cost goes up. There's a separate line with dollars coming in on their fees for the
it's for shorts and a top.
Part of the problem with the accounts payable is that you see all the expenditures, it doesn't show any inlays.
Yeah, we had a discussion on that, and showing revenues in the future.
Me and Barbara are working on it.
Would be extremely helpful, especially for increasing the budget in Parks and Rec down the road.
Agreed. And again, and Mrs. Horak are trying to find a better way to.
Thank you.
Yep. Number 60, I'm kind of over that again. Business data, issues, professional services. It's number 60.
That's Mr. Headley Lawson Headley. Lawson Headley for Brian's support.
Is there any way to supplement that, I wonder? I mean, I know that's somebody else's department.
I'd love to talk about something, but I prefer to when Mrs. Lenner's here. I have a pretty strong opinion, and she knows it.
Okay.
But I think collaboratively we can help do something with that, but since she's not able to be here today, so that's just a little bit.
How much is disappearance?
A little bit after one uses this goal, because you still have to maintain the right to be able to make sure the transition happens, and then you still got a database, but
the community should take care of all the transitions.
Yes.
How much did we spend in this
group? Yeah, 3,000 is not very important.
A lot more than we want to.
Yeah, he typically his rates are $5,000 so this is just $3,175, so maybe he did a little bit less work on previously.
If we just hire him, we can say no.
On the left.
Mr. Wager, yes, sir. Actually, we do that annually.
There's one that it has.
Is that not required to do that anymore? Are we? Stay mad as you move. Yes, sir.
Well, there's nothing you're talking about. Two different
times. All right.
I'll just have to be there.
But I think that 7,400 is included in those professional services.
a specific list of what's required. If you just have that as a report to the next one, it just says what's required, you should have.
My understanding is that you change that maybe every 2 years or 3 years on one AEQ
requires at that rate, but if it's just a systematic check, it's no longer required.
Does anybody else have anything on the question?
We're going to have 4 minutes.
Mr. Weaver.
I'm moving to council payroll payroll to be ratified for the period December 15, 2012 to January 25, 2013, in the amount of $1,527,656.
Sir, second.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Hollenbrook. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Moving on to tab S, budget report. So first and second quarter of 513.
And if when you see Melissa Parks in our finance department,
oh, thank you for the format. She worked hard on the
yes.
Budget report is the department answering a question. So it's your quarter, next quarterly update. You'll see this a month after each quarter. This shows the first half of the year and expenditures. Specifically, you can use it for questions, but also looking at percentages on expenditures.
Yeah, that's good.
Mr. Reed, what page are you?
Well, she's going to give it.
We really kind of saw this as a question session rather than a report session. What
page are you on?
I'm on page 20.
Anyone have any questions on page 20? Mr.
Hit board contingency. Again, we'll go back to that separation of the county and the other categories. We had two categories. I was just wondering about when you're going to put them in a separate form. You do back here, beginning budget, you go down to 150 and 110. Do you have any comments on that?
I'm not. Which lines are you talking about, Mr. Weaver?
We're talking about on page 20, board contingency. And you listed at $229,000. And you haven't spent anything.
Well, we don't actually spend it from this line. We move money out of this line.
I was confused over the last time. What you're doing?
I think 150 of it is for the...
150 of it is for the EMS contracting, and then I think 2 meetings ago, the board approved to transfer 110,000 of that 150 into the EMS budget.
Yeah, except that on this one, I guess we didn't transfer until after the first year. This one doesn't reflect that 110 that's moved, because this is only through the end of December. That money was moved after January 1st. And so the 110 that came out of the 150, before you still there, the 110 went to emergency management, the new set of codes. So you don't see it reflected here because it moved down
okay.
Because the report closed. This report closed December 31st.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions?
And we'll reformat the budget report the same way as the other one, so it'll have line numbers all
the time. Okay, I appreciate it.
So it'll just make it easier to monitor.
There are no items of unfinished business. Are there any items of new business before we Mr. Hollenbrook.
Yes, about a month ago, we heard some issues on the fees for Pleasant Grove. Whether they stay the same or what they are now, whether they're going to change in the future. I understand we're in budget season and staff is stressed at collecting information and doesn't have time to deal with this small issue. Well, to me it's not a small issue. It's something that needs to be addressed fairly immediately. It's been 30 days. There's organizations planning events that need that information. What they're going to be paying out in fees. And I'd like to put 30 days, come back to the board with a fee structure. tweaked or disapproved by this board. And that way, groups like the Chamber and Historical Society can prepare for their summer events on fall events. And nonprofit groups will be able to see if it's this week. Work of means to a nonprofit fundraiser if it wasn't broken, or if they're going to be charged because of the fees, or if it's a small fee, which is acceptable. And then we also have Farmer's Market, which doesn't pay any fees to use Pleasant Grove at present time, and what costs are associated with that. Well, but that's going to be starting up in March or April.
And you're saying maybe a fee on Old Farm Day, things like that?
I'm not saying that's going to be up to Parks and Rec and to set a fee schedule, but we need to decide definitively what and if there are going to be any changes. Because you've got several groups out there that I'm getting emails all the time from that are up in the air around their expenditures, what they're going to have to spend on the road to use Pleasant Grove. Well, I don't want to wait until May when we're done with budget season to go into the summer and find out what those fees are. Let's get it done now. Staff in Parks and Rec isn't working on our budget. The time can be spent right now to get that handled.
Mr. Nichols, is 30 days enough time for Parks and Rec to make some recommendations to what it would like to see?
I'd like to tell you what the process is. When I got on board, one of the first things I did after the Parks and Rec and Public Works Director on board, I asked them to start looking at what we charge for various things. I didn't know and I wanted to know, and I knew there was differences, and I heard lots of different things. They have been working on that. We've looked at the school's plan because the school's has a pretty good plan out there for charging things too. And so that process has been ongoing. Mr. Stevens and Mr. Smith are doing that with their staff because those are the two groups that actually get tapped to help support this. I've seen a tentative draft. We're meeting actually tomorrow is our next meeting on this to look at a smooth draft from the county staff's perspective. Then it goes to the Parks and Rec Advisory Board. Their meeting's not until March. I've just asked Mr. Smith if he can do that. We'll do a call meeting in the month of February. We'll present you a plan on March 6th at the budget at the board meeting. What you're going to have to do then is decide, do you want your current fee schedule? If you want the proposed schedule, if you want some hybrid of it. I'm certainly going to be proposing fees in a different way than what we have in our schedule now. And you can do what you want with it. I don't have a really strong opinion about the relative merit of fees or not fees, except that Parks and Rec programs historically have fees to go support programs. And I'll show you what those costs are.
So 30 days is good.
March 6th, March 3rd. But I represent the board on the Parks and Recreation. And for that schedule that you're saying, we have a call meeting in February. We don't have one chance to look at these schedules. Hopefully, we can advise of the saying it's okay or give some input. We won't have one meeting unless you can get it to us ahead of time. That's not my preference.
I'd rather do it in a deliberative manner so that people have a chance to do it. I can talk with different organizations and groups, but if there's a need to get it done faster, we'll be glad to get it done faster. It's not my preference, but it's okay, and I can do it.
Yeah.
That's good.
Any other items to do business?
I don't know if it's appropriate to talk about this, but anyway, same thing, it's the same issue with the fees. I know that the fees are absolutely necessary, but there's anyone in this county that's agreed with. The issues can be where organizations have invested some monies into who doesn't work. And it seems to me those investments for the benefit of the county should be considered in those fees or some way to deal with them, because that's happened,
yeah,
you know, in the past, and that's, you know, there's still additional infrastructures that are needed to make the events work. And where's the house going to be at?
Well, the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board met with the Chamber of Commerce. We know that they have put money into the electrical system,
mm-hmm,
and they brought it to us. So I think think that we're aware of that, and I'm sure that that would be considered. I don't know how, I have no idea, but it is not. And I appreciate it.
When did that happen?
Last year.
Last year.
Barbecue festival, they're expecting that they're going to have to do additional costs.
Right. So someone approved that, or?
Discussion, it really is a matter of how you accept that it is something for the public. And when we talk about it costs some dollars, we need to start thinking about it in a fashion. What does it cost to really manage Pleasant Grove? And what does it cost to maintain it? What does it cost to put the infrastructure in? We haven't looked at Pleasant Grove in a fashion. We've been trying to do things over the long term and fix a different house, make it a visitor center, and those kinds of things. And we talked about the last board year. Well, we've got to find other ways to fund these things. Well, that's what it comes down to. Is how do you keep your hopes and your attention? And how are you going to provide the money for that? To me, it's a whole program that the county's provided. And it may take more money than maybe you could probably think a little bit more than what they have to think about what they want to do about it. What's it going to take to?
We have a plan.
Yeah, but talk about dollars. And some of these things are
also broke down issues.
Those who are actually invested in it and putting things into it, you can start a foundation that would actually take care of it.
That's what I mean. Really need to be something to think about.
Well, I think we want to.
How we want to push it.
And you're right. And we got to be fair. You can't have one organization do it free every year in one organization. You're all of a sudden going to charge fees.
But sometimes it's based on that. It's sort of like you had Meals on Wheels to use for the community center. And we've always charged them less because of their mission.
Right. The fee schedule would have a different level for nonprofits versus
nonprofits for versus, yeah. I'm sure we can.
It sounded like we need to block off the March meeting.
I would just like to let I'd like to just let y'all know I'm on the board of directors for Baco. That's my first meeting. Very interesting to see all the other supervisors that are around the table with their own.
Thanks for bringing that in.
Like us before.
And from all over Virginia.
Yeah.
Is there any other item of new business?
Yes.
Do you know
what I mean? I have no item of new business to go.
3:49, we're going to open up Southern Crusade Round of Public Comment again. Please remember to keep it within 5 minutes on topic and your comments directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to address the board? Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Close the second round of public comments. Board Supervisor is going to go into closed meeting to discuss personnel and legal matters. Mr. Weaver.
Yeah. I move to the Board of Supervisors to enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provision of Section 2.2-3711A.1, 2.2-3711A.6 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing personnel and legal matters.
So amended. Motion
intended to refer to the section on legal matters.
So I have a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Ullenbrock. All in favor? Opposed? Chair votes aye. Enter into closed session.
That whole book's going to be online today. I don't know exactly what's in the book.
Yeah, like, I'll need 3 computers to download it.
We need one in the library.
Thank you.
We're just going to do a brief overview of our respective operations and some of the similarities that we have, some of the things that we do the same. On this first presentation, on this first slide, go ahead.
This is the topology of our network for the schools. If you focus on the center, here is the Abrams Building. And as you can see here, all of our schools at the bottom, all of our buildings connect to Abrams, and we have a shared internet connection with CenturyLink that is leased. So all the schools share this internet connection out to CenturyLink. On the left-hand side here is our high school. We have a leased 100 megabyte point-to-point metro ethernet connection that is leased through CenturyLink. The middle school, which is the next one over, right here, we actually own the fiber between the middle school going into Abrams, which is nice. We're not paying for that on a monthly recurring charge. So we have a gigabyte connection through there. And then all these other connections here with the lightning bolts, these are our leased microwave point-to-point connections. We lease those through a company called Conterra Broadband. Those require the towers that you see at all of our buildings, except Central that has a roof mount. And all of those have dishes on the top of those towers, and they're directed back towards Abrams, where they all tie in. And again, all of these connections go through Abrams. The Flubana County Administrative Building Complex, as well as Parks and Rec, also have lease connections with Conterra Broadband, and they are also pointed back to the Abrams Building. So as you can see here, the Abrams Building is the network hub for most of the county.
Go ahead, Jonathan. Okay, and this is a slide just comparing the staffing in each department. One thing I'll call your attention to, and we're going to reuse this throughout the rest of this presentation, is on the left-hand side in the blue is the data for the county. Right here is the county IT department with two full-time staff members. And on the right side, we'll put the school's data in red. And as you can see here, there are six reflecting the larger size of their operation.
Here are the support areas. This is comprised of departments and buildings. Jonathan has a lot of different departments to support, ranging from your typical human resources and finance departments down to your parks and rec, your CSA office. For the schools, we're supporting all of our school buildings, all of our operations, and that goes down to even our bus garage. Go ahead. This here is a picture that I took of the Abrams Data Center. It's located in the basement of Abrams. This is where all of the networking equipment ties into Abrams, but we also have the majority of our servers housed in there. There's about 20 servers in there. We have our bus radio communication system in there, as well as Jonathan's equipment is in there.
And you'll see that on this next slide here. On the right, this is the county's primary data center. It's housed in the administration building right outside here. And this is the majority of our servers, so not all of them are located in that location. Here on the right is the equipment that we have in the Abrams building, and that's basically what we use to hand off to the county to get out to the internet from our system. This links our system in with theirs and from there to the internet.
Here we have the supported... Oh, wait, that's you. I'm sorry. Excuse me.
This is a comparison of this of who we support in each respective office. On the left, again, here's the county's data. And you can see how it compares to the schools. The schools are quite a bit bigger in terms of the number of users that they support. Schools are on the right again. The county also, I will note, the county does provide Munis support for the library, the sheriff's office, social services, and the extension office, too. That's the only thing that we really do for them is make sure that they can get into Munis to look at their budget numbers and see their data.
These are the supported applications. As you can see here, we both have a lot of applications that we support. Some major differences, the schools, of course, we have instructional software that we support. We have three district assessments that we do on an annual basis. Some of these happen four times a year. Sometimes they happen twice a year. We both share cloud-based systems. And again, just to reiterate what Jonathan was saying over here, there are some entities that the county does not support, such as the public library, social services, the sheriff's office, or the extensions office. They have their own private consultants.
So on this slide, I just want to talk a little bit about the cloud and what it is. Basically, a good definition of the cloud, it's a very broad definition, but it is internet-hosted services, and this can be a lot of different things. It can be if you use GoDaddy or a web hosting provider to host your website, that would be one example. Another good example would be the county's email service, which is hosted by Microsoft on the cloud, and we use that to run all of our email services, including for the board's email accounts. Some of the advantages, there are a lot of advantages to it, but the main thing is that it limits your local ownership of the hardware and the need to maintain it, because it's maintained off-site. Basically, that limits what you have to provide to, you have to provide access to the internet, and then from there, once you can get to the internet, they handle the rest. Another benefit is the scalability. For example, when we go live with the new website, which is hosted in the cloud, if all of a sudden a lot of people are accessing it and it's running very slow and we need to beef it up and get some more power behind it, more processing speed or bandwidth, it's easy to do that. I can log in and do it in a couple of clicks. And, of course, it does cost more, but I don't have to actually take a server down and upgrade the equipment. Some of the disadvantages are also related to the fact that you don't control that equipment. It doesn't eliminate every piece of equipment. You still need the basic infrastructure to get connected to the internet, and you still need some things to be hosted on site. It does require additional bandwidth because now you're relying heavily upon pulling data from the cloud and putting it back into the cloud, and so your internet connection becomes very heavily leaned upon for that. Another disadvantage is you do lose some control over the system, and a good example of this would be when Microsoft, who hosts our email, they were upgrading their system to a new cloud-based system, and they basically told us, they gave us a month in advance, and they said, on this day, we're cutting over a new system, and there's going to be a little bit of downtime and transition, and I had several people come to me and say, well, Can't you tell them this isn't a good time, because I believe it was right in the middle of budget season last year? And the answer is no, you can't. You really don't have a lot of leverage, especially an account of our size. We have a couple hundred email accounts. And to illustrate that point, I just want to, I'm not going to labor this too heavily, but this is how us sitting here in the courthouse, this is the steps that we go through in order to connect to the email in the cloud from your iPads there. And here we are in the courthouse, and we're connecting to a Wi-Fi wirelessly, and that goes to some networking equipment here in the courthouse. From there, the line runs over to the admin building. There's some more networking equipment. It comes out of the admin building and runs to the tower that's back there behind the admin building. And that tower shoots a radio signal over to the Abrams building. There's a big tower outside there. We come down from the tower into the Abrams building to some more county equipment. And then from that county equipment, we hand off to a piece of the school's equipment. And from there, we get out onto the internet. And this is the equipment that becomes crucial the more you rely upon cloud-based services, is that infrastructure right there, because you're no longer going to a server in the admin building for something.
Both the county and the schools are already on the cloud. We've both been moving several of our applications and servers onto the cloud. Typically, it's whatever makes the most sense from a cost perspective and from a management perspective. Jonathan had already mentioned your email platform, your web server hosting. The schools just went to Google Apps for Education for our collaborative suite, which is great because it's free, which is the best of all cloud computing. We also have our library cataloging system. All of our assessment software is on the cloud. And if any of you have children or grandchildren in the school division and you get calls for snow days, our school messenger notification system is through the cloud.
Mm-hmm. That's late. Sorry.
I'm going to touch on a couple of current county technology initiatives and then let Josh speak to the school's current initiatives. But right now, one big thing that's been obsessing a lot of my time has been working on this website redesign, and we're getting very close with it. Another big project that I've been working on this year is server virtualization, and that is a lot like cloud services. That's designed to reduce the amount of hardware that we need to purchase and to make better use of the hardware that you have. And I expect to, with one server that I purchased this year, I expect to be able to consolidate about five, maybe six, being optimistic, six of the county servers onto that one machine. Another issue that we're working on is obtaining dedicated internet access for the county. As you saw in that previous slide, we are currently basically piggybacking off of the school's internet and consuming a certain set amount of their bandwidth. Due to E-rate issues and the way that those connections are funded, the county is going to need to obtain its own internet service, which will run to the admin building here. And Steve, do you want to? Okay. Another thing we're working on is the continued Munis rollout. Even though the personal property and the real estate is on hold until the next version of Munis comes out, we are continuing with the employee self-service and the citizen self-service modules, and that will allow HR applicant tracking, online applications. It will allow the employees a much more efficient timesheet process and allow them to do that all online. And last of all, we are upgrading to the next major version of Munis when it is released in August of 2013. That's not a hard date yet. It could be released as late as September, but August right now is the date. And something I didn't put on here is we are also in the process of upgrading all of our servers to Windows Server 2012. A lot of the county servers right now are on Windows Server 2003, which is two versions behind. And the final server upgrades for Windows Server will take place to coincide with this, because this is the first version that supports 2012. So,
completed these
For what? Well, it's actually good, because when I got that server for virtualization, we got a data center license, which allows us to create as many virtual machines as we like with Server 2012. We don't need to pay separate licensing for them. So whether I do 4 or 6 virtual machines, we don't have to pay any extra in licensing.
It's per processor.
It's done based per processor in the actual machine. Yes. So do you, so the basically the county needs to migrate off of the public schools internet connection, and we are looking to do that by July of 2013. The total additional cost will be $14,200 in the first year. We will gain a little bit of that back because I hope to move Parks and Rec to a dedicated lease line and to be able to eliminate our tower. Basically,
no, these are, they're existing.
Well, once the county gets their internet dropped to the admin building, the only thing that we'll be using the towers for will be to get over to Parks and Rec. It's not a particularly fast connection as it is, and I'd like to, if it is cost efficient, and the cost estimates I've gotten indicate that we would be saving some money to go with the lease line. That would be faster, better service, and basically would just be on our own independent system. I wouldn't need to.
There, I would imagine it's subtle, drawing pad to put in.
By June of this year, there's a cell tower somewhere in that vicinity that they're running fiber to, and it's going to go past Parks and Rec. Okay. And the CenturyLink has indicated to me that that should be done by June.
Okay.
So it'll probably.
Out of curiosity, how far are they running that down?
I honestly don't know. I didn't ask. Once I found that it was going up to Parks and Rec, that was. All he said was that there was a cell phone tower in that direction that they had to run it to.
Might be the new one that got
moved.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good to know. Unfortunately, that cost, this is new cost, starting July 1st, but it is in the budget you saw. That's built into the budget. You've done good work on getting this cost a lot of time.
Are you good?
Yep.
Okay. From the schools initiatives, right now, a couple weeks ago, we had a snow day and replaced all the UPSs in our data center. Thank you for approving our CIP request. Now we have all of our servers and networking equipment up and protected. The old equipment was about 8 years old and wasn't worth anything. It was a nightmare. Right now, we have a lot of projects going on at the high school. We also are virtualizing all of our servers there. Right now, we have 7 servers that we're virtualizing. We also are implementing a SAN, which is basically a large storage array that's on the network, and all these servers are able to tie into that. It's about 22 terabytes in size. So we've scaled it out as for future growth, so that when we virtualize our servers in the Abrams building, we can actually tie the two together and create what's called a DR solution, a disaster recovery solution, so that if one of the buildings were to go down, all of those servers and the data would flow over to the other building. And other than making the networking change, you wouldn't really notice all those servers and data was down. We are also replacing the computers in our CTE business labs. There's about 80 computers in there. That are about 4 years old. We're getting them up to the newer operating system, getting the newer office suite on them, and all the other applications they use for instruction. And our class sizes have grown at the high school, so we are also expanding the original testing labs from 24 computers to 30 computers, simply to provide enough seats for those students to have access to computers. We are also moving to the web-based map assessment. It's an adaptive assessment. So when you're taking a test, question number one, if you get it right, it actually gets more difficult, and it's trying to assess how smart are you. We are implementing that right now. One thing that is not on this slide that we just finished was we just finished replacing the gas pump pedestal at Carysbrook today. So now the county and the schools have access to a new gas pump pedestal. So we'll be able to better track the who's using what gas with what vehicle, provide better maintenance of our vehicles, stuff like that. It monitors odometer readings and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Go back to the web-based map assessment.
Yeah. Sure. It's an adaptive assessment. It's different than like the SOLs that is.
I'm talking about the measurement of magnetic
drivers. Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Any other questions on that? It's used for we're using it for the teacher evaluations and trying to differentiate instruction for our students. One of the items that we have on here is the issue of closing of Abrams. Mr. Nichols, if you could click on that for me. Thank you. Closing of Abrams would be a major disruption of service, especially for the school division. The first slide that we talked about was the topology of our network. All of our buildings flows through Abrams. So if we're talking about relocating that entire data center, it's not just the servers, it's all the networking equipment, it's our bus radio communications. We're talking about significant downtime and a significant cost. Those costs are dependent upon where the new location is. If you're talking about moving it nearby to that tower so that I still have access to that tower, then the cost could be mitigated a little bit. It's still going to be very expensive because ultimately you're going to have to recreate the entire data center in another spot, buy all additional equipment, redundant equipment, have it all in place ready to go, and you're literally going to be talking to your service providers and say, on this day we need to do a hot cut and move everything over, and then you can remove all the old equipment out of Abrams. If we cannot use the tower that is in Abrams, then the price goes up even more. If you're saying we want you to move the Abrams data center to Carysbrook, now we're going to need a larger tower. We may need to go into different lease agreements with different service providers while still paying out our lease that we have with Kintera. We're in year one of a 5-year agreement with Kintera. Every building that you close costs about $40,000 that you have to pay back to pay out that contract, as well as we lease all the equipment, including the tower. So Kintera could tell us that we want you to return all the equipment in the tower, and at that point we would have to figure out how to return those towers. I've talked to them, and they would rather that they leave the towers so that they could provide service to other customers that may come about, whether they're cellular customers or even the county would want to take advantage of that. And we actually have a cellular lease revenue at the Abrams site, and Telos is using our tower for cellular business, and we get about $4,000 annually from that.
Break down $1 million.
Sure, it's all of the networking equipment. So you're talking about all of those Kintera radios. We're going to have to get additional radios brought into that new location. They are going to need to be rack mounted, so we need additional racks. We are going to need to need whatever building it is, the physical space to be prepared. Ideally, you want to have something other than what is like a classroom. You want to have, you know, a raised floor. You want to have a proper HVAC. You want to have.
Do you have those now?
No, we're in an old chemistry lab. Now we have retrofitted it to the best of the school's ability. We did a. They have brought a. Right now, it's the best place for it.
What do you have as an emergency? You have emergency backup for something else. What do you do from that place that you call home?
You're saying if Abrams was to burn up?
Well, that little room could be flooded. Mm-hmm.
if the roof, you know, depending on what it was, if it was broken into, if it was flooded, whatever, we would have to roll with it to the best of our ability. You know, if there was a flood, you're going to have to replace that equipment. You're going to have to go through your insurance process.
That's a million-dollar process. Should that occur?
It definitely is, because you're talking about the new high school connection is going from the high school to the Palmyra central office, and then it's got to be rerouted to a new connection. We're in an annual agreement with them, so we're going to have to tie in that agreement. We're in an annual agreement with CenturyLink for our internet connection, so we're going to have to, again, it's the same company, it's riding the same fiber, but wherever we go, we have to make sure that there's fiber in place for CenturyLink to bring it in. We're talking about all the Kintera connections. When we did that, that was a month process in itself, just bringing in the towers. We most likely would not have to bring new towers at all of the other buildings, but the Abrams building tower is the largest out of all the towers. So it depends on where we would end up for all the other connections to tie back to. The middle school right now has a point-to-point fiber connection that we ran, so now we would have to potentially have another service agreement with some other provider, whether it be Kintera or CenturyLink. And then all of our servers, we can't really take down the servers that we're using in production, so you'd have to buy all new servers, put them in place, set them up, ready to go, so that when we're cutting, there isn't this much time of downtime. I mean, you're at the mercy of your service provider, so you want to mitigate that as much as possible. If you're talking about the towers themselves, you're limited by the distance of the radio's connection down to the internal units. The copper that rides between them is about 300 feet as the maximum distance. So I really don't have very far that I can go from that tower before we would have to talk about putting a hut under the Abrams tower, then putting some networking equipment under there, and then running fiber out to wherever we were housed, say at the middle school. The bus radio communication system, the guy that we had do that was in-house. He had an FCC license. He has since retired. And so now we would have to go to a company like Pro Communications, have them come in and rebuild our entire bus radio system, or move it, tweak the signals to get it back up and working. It's going to be a costly endeavor. There's definitely going to be significant downtime.
It seems though that you really, someone should be thinking about changing the environment. The place that you have is, well, maybe the best place, it's mm-hmm. the only place. It's not secure. Mm-hmm. You do not have a good environment there. You have old equipment, and you have a window, a major size window, on one wall that could easily be smashed, and all your equipment, all your everything you got going would be gone. It's just a lousy. Anybody who works in IT would probably have to cry every morning to come out because it's crap. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, but it's crap.
I respect that. Right?
For us, it's one of those things. Okay, so you've got arguably old equipment where you're at now mm-hmm. in the basement. You don't have the race school room. You don't have a proper HVAC. Maybe you do have a proper HVAC.
We have a proper HVAC now.
So you're in that facility now. So the question for us is, okay, if you keep throwing money at Abrams in the situation and mm-hmm. the conditions you're in now, or do you make a transition where, the short term might be a little expensive, and the long term is going to be much better for schools, county writ large. Those are the kind of things we have to weigh out. I don't know if it's going to cost $1 million. But it'll be in the six figures for certain. But the question is, do you keep throwing money at those server racks down there? Do you keep throwing money at that hub when we can put you in a more proper environment? Now, I don't know if the solution is to say, okay, maybe we get you out of the basement and put you somewhere on campus. Mm-hmm.
The location is excellent simply because of the proximity to three of the schools, Central, Carysbrook, and the middle school.
And obviously, we're talking about $300,000 in recurring costs every year. Obviously, not all of that's going into your server rack, for instance. But should catastrophe occur, we got to come back and put the money in there anyway. And so, those are the sort of things we have to kind of mitigate. Risk versus, mitigation. Mm-hmm.
Aren't there some better buildings on the Abrams campus where that could be housed?
The band room is the same vintage as the Abrams building.
I know it's the same. Mm-hmm. But it's not any...
It has single pane windows at ground level. The electric and the HVAC would have to be replaced. The ceiling floods. I mean, wherever you put it, if you're going to use building facilities that are already existent, you're going to have to renovate.
So what can you do with where you are now to bring it up to better standard and protect it?
It would take a lot of work. Right now, I mean, one wall is just a pane of glass, so that would be very easy for somebody to just break in and steal items. Well, you'd have to put either bars or you'd have to put some sort of laminate that allows you, it would crack it, but it wouldn't break in. You could look at, we have a security alarm system in place. We have a proper HVAC now, but it's on generator power. It has enough electricity, but like Mr. Chesser said, it does need some help. This is my first year as director. Prior to that, I've been there since 2004 as a network administrator. So when I came on and my colleague, another gentleman by the name of Manny Rodriguez Sr., we came in, and at the time the network was a mess. The servers were distributed out to all the buildings. And so we said, we have to get a grip over this. And so the only thing we had at our disposal was the Abrams building, because that's where we were housed, and at the time that room was empty. Right. We were in the adjacent room, that was our office. So we said, well, this room is perfect because it's central, it has everything we need. And so we slowly but surely started bringing the network connections in, and we started centralizing all of our servers. And at that time, we did brand new servers, we did brand new UPSs, we did brand new networking equipment, and since then the servers, depending on what the initiatives are for the school division, so like we just replaced our student information servers last year. We also replaced our website with a SharePoint, Microsoft SharePoint farm last year. So those servers are new, but the majority of our servers are between 4 to 8 years old. And they're similar to Jonathan's. They're running 2003 server. They're two versions behind. The networking equipment, some of the equipment is fine, but some of the equipment needs to be upgraded because we actually have, I was going to touch on it in a moment, we need to upgrade our bandwidth that we have. We currently have 50 megabytes shared, and we're oversubscribed. We need to upgrade that, so we have a great deal with CenturyLink. We can quadruple it for about $270 a month more. But in order to do that, I need to upgrade a couple switches and some other equipment or firewalls in order to provide enough bandwidth through our interfaces to make that happen.
Those numbers that you're talking about, are they included in this budget?
Yeah, yep. Mr. Nichols, if you...
Not this budget.
Our budget. Mm-hmm. So these are some of the needs that we have. So the top item there is the bandwidth upgrade, and it would be about $3,500 annually. Right below that is the data center networking equipment upgrade, and we're looking at upgrading 2 firewalls and 3 switches. And I believe that to be about $50,000, but it could be more if you were to, we have a core switch that's a chassis switch. So what it does is instead of taking several single servers, you get blades that are switches inside there. That is a lot more expensive item. But by doing that, you can take advantage of that in a future technology need, which would be to virtualize all of our servers. So you pay a little bit more to upgrade the switches, but You wouldn't have to tackle that when you went to virtualize all your servers. Right now, the data center networking equipment upgrade has to happen because we are moving forward with the bandwidth upgrade. We have to have that happen in order to meet the needs of the demand that we have. The next thing that we really need to address is the building level networking upgrades. Right now, all of our buildings, excluding the high school, has a 7-year-old centralized wireless system. Again, when I first came on, we didn't have wireless in any of our buildings. So we said, well, we need wireless in our buildings. We implemented a solution from Airspace that was bought out by Cisco Systems. You may have heard of them. It's a wonderful system, but we've just outgrown it. Right now, we have classroom sizes between 25 and 30 students. When a teacher gets a mobile cart, all it is a cart with a bunch of laptops in it. They bring it into the classroom and they say, okay, we're going to do this cloud computing program or we're going to do an assessment now. Every kid takes out the laptop, logs in. Well, the first 20 kids, they're able to access the wireless, but then the 21st kid, the 22nd kid, they start having problems because the wireless access points were made to handle 15 to 20 connections, not 20 to 30 to 40 connections. Everybody has cell phones now, tablets, all these other devices, and they're all accessing our network. So we're having some significant problems trying to do assessments, trying to do cloud computing and other applications, especially when we start looking at having several classrooms side by side, all doing these items at the same time. In order to do that, I was looking at doing a phased approach where you would tackle, say, the middle school first and say, okay, we're going to replace all the wireless access points that we have in this building as well as add a lot more to make this building a lot more dense in order to meet the demand. Upgrade the switches that are directly connected to those links to provide the appropriate bandwidth, and then get them up to speed. Those costs would be between $100,000 to $150,000, and that would be, it depends on what the school board votes next year for Cunningham and Columbia and some other buildings, but depending on how many buildings we have left going into next year, you would talk about, at minimum, the middle school, Carisbrook, and Central. The school board office. And then again, the server virtualization upgrade. We have about 20 servers housed in Abrams, and that's ranging from our SharePoint farm, our student information system, our finance system, several other systems that we use just to manage the network. All of that would require buying new servers, virtualizing them, another SAN, and then deploying the DR solution. Below that, we have Abrams UPS's division building UPS's replaced. You did help us replace the UPS's in the data center, but we have UPS's in all of our buildings that support all of our networking equipment and all of our other buildings and all of our telephone systems and bus radio systems. So we need to replace those as well because they're all the same vintage. They're about 8 years old. The next three lines below that, these are items that have never had replacement cycles before. And I have funds that I get from the state called VPSA funds. Those come with a lot of strings. I'm really only supposed to spend that money for student computers that are used for assessments. And so I cannot buy teacher laptops. I cannot buy CT equipment for our career and technical students. I cannot buy instructional hardware such as LCD projectors, which replaced overheads, or any other interactive whiteboards. And so we need to start looking at have replacement cycles for these. Our teachers need to have laptops in their hands to do instruction, to do grading, to do communications with parents and their other staff, whether it be administrators or colleagues. The CT equipment, right now we have three business labs, an engineering lab, and a graphic arts lab. That alone is about 150 computers plus four servers. Those four servers are being virtualized right now, and the 80 business labs are being replaced, but the engineering lab computers alone, which is 30 of them, cost about $30,000 because they're high-end machines based on the applications that they run. If we talk about adding in a second engineering lab, if we talk about adding computer certifications, even things like cosmetology, They now do computer simulations to cut people's hair rather than cutting people's hair, which all require computers, require networking equipment. It all costs money. So.
Pretty bad your chart is the other night, Eva. I'm sure a century or two.
The instructional, replacement cycles, again, the LCD projectors, the interactive whiteboards. We try to have an LCD projector in every classroom because that's what teachers use for their instruction now. And it's not just teachers standing up in front of the classroom, connecting their laptop to the projector and projecting slideshows like this. The students actually come up and manipulate interactive whiteboards. So the students are actually using this technology to teach other classmates. It's excellent. If you can ever go over to the high school and check out what we have over there, it's very nice.
It's a marker board. Not a blackboard, but a whiteboard. All right. Sorry.
And the bottom line is additional technology staffing. Last year, actually before I became director, but I was, you know, talking with my administration, I said if we're going to be open a new high school that had more technology than all of our other buildings combined, we really needed to have another employee to be able to handle the demand of support. And unfortunately, we did not get that. That need has not gone away. And as we continue to add services, we continue to need that support.
And as a side discussion point, this brings home the point that we have to have a discussion, philosophical discussion about what goes on CFP and what doesn't. Because all three and a half are identified for CFP, you've got to decide whether those are operating expenses or whether they're capital expenses. You've got to decide whether the budget to fill those things in.
When you say next two, three years, does that mean that needs to happen, reoccur every year or every, or is it going to start 3 or 4 years?
It needs to happen, say it happens next year, it needs to happen next year and then the following 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
And then after that third or fourth year, then the problem should have been addressed.
But every time it's 100 to 150,000.
Correct.
Every time.
Mm-hmm. But not for every school, it's just some community practices.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, let's clarify that. Mm-hmm. Let's go on high. Third line down, $150,000. Is that $150,000 that's going to be spent over the next 3 to 4 years?
No, annually.
$150,000 a year for the next 3 to 4 years?
Yes, yeah. So it'd be $450.
That's what I was wanting to understand.
Mm-hmm. That's an annual amount. Right. And you can spend 3 or 4 times.
The total is on the low end for just 1 year.
Right. Okay.
But then with the technology goes, you have to be able to manage it to the next level of technology.
Mm-hmm.
So it is.
So it's
never ending. Right. What I recall, because we got to the point when I was doing this stuff, every 3 years you have to upgrade all the equipment and everything.
We try to.
So we're looking at 230,000 a year. More than what you're getting now. So per year for.
I don't understand where did you get the 230?
Annually, if you had all the annual numbers, 50 grand, 45, 40, 65,
okay.
500, comes to about, what, 200 grand, somewhere around there.
The bottom mm-hmm. numbers are about 200 grand.
Yeah, right? And then you
so
have.
That's annual.
Yes.
In every budget from now on
yes.
forever.
And those issues are not going away.
Pack an extra 200 grand just for IT.
Mm-hmm.
On top of
the other needs.
On top of normal operating costs.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, the distinct difference here is that I think we need to make clear from a technology point of view, especially for school systems, but certainly for the lesser degrees of accounting. So those bottom four things are not new. They are daily operating needs.
But we're not making them now.
Well, we have them. We've been peacefully, partial part, but they're just the regular operating. there's no plan in place to do it on a systematic basis.
Yeah, I guess the county, right, I guess 3 years ago with Manny Rodriguez Jr., had actually ended up switching over to an actual replacement cycle. Because prior to, he had not been on one. So the county was literally working off computers, probably like 6-7 years old. And so we finally sorted that out, got the county on a recurring schedule. It cost a bit of money, you know, folks were happy about it. But in the long run, it works. So that's what they're asking for here, is that can they get on a similar schedule?
We're working on a 3-year plan for not only technology. We're going to show here's what we need if we could get that all at one chunk, but 3-year plan for technology and even for STEM and CTE, like what we have to have. But since you asked me to comment, I will tell you, one of my biggest concerns being in Fluvanna as their superintendent has been the technology piece, and not because of our personnel. And I would say this whether with Mr. Gifford or not, he is masterful at his job. He's a very, very, very smart. Very smart.
Ours is smart too.
And but they asked me to speak.
Okay, so how much is this raise?
But seriously, so much of what we've done, even with teacher evaluations, testing, all falls back on how good the system is.
Do you have a spare $500,000 in the budget?
Do I have a spare?
Yeah, somewhere in there. No.
Okay, yeah.
No.
Hey, I know you've seen. The commercial that a little boy is sick, yes, and he goes to school, the virtual classroom,
yes,
on his way, that you can be at home and equipment, and I'm sick, but you know, homebound anymore. You can't homebound, trying to find homebound teacher. Turn your computer or TV on, get your lunch.
It depends what part of the county you're going to live in, though. Oh, yeah. It's not going to work on dial-up.
I won't call.
Me either.
Probably not.
My cell phone.
But that's a few.
Most of us dial-up cell phone. Yeah. The sucker's my cell phone. That was very comprehensive, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, you've been a lot of discussion.
Even though I didn't understand any of it, because that's what precipitated a knowledge of what our whole package looks like, but also the potential. This is another one of those items we were talking earlier today, and aside from piecemeal and stuff, you know, it's just come to the point where and I don't know if you would agree with me or not, Tom, but we keep piecemeal and band-aiding stuff together. And it's just come to a point in my mind that not only this, but a lot of things we just need to just take care of. Well, and I was discussing that earlier. You know, I hate to keep coming back to it, but, you know, there's cheap money out there right now. And it is. When you think about what the future, and even in your home, you're forecasting 5-10 years down the road, and what that dollar's worth now is a lot less money than it's going to be worth in 4 or 5 years. And I'm just seeing that now as an opportunity to get on some of the county things and some of the necessities. I mean, I didn't understand any of this, and I'm not even joking. It's way over my head, and probably way over most people's head. But if it's what it has to be,
trouble is, this is a recurring cost. Some of that is $200,000 a year. That bothers me. But the stuff that you need to initiate it is what I'm talking about. I mean, if you're going to spend money on things right now, and repairs or CIP items,
one-time
cost. Now's the time to be jumping on those because you can't run from them forever. And now it, when you're getting bonds at 2.9% or 2.8%, that isn't going to last too much longer.
But then what you're suggesting, then go ahead and borrow and then go ahead and increase another 3 or 4 pennies, is that sort of your rationale then at this time because it is cheap money?
I'm saying that the cheap money is better than paying the big money to keep running into these problems every year. Every year we run into an issue with a roof falling down or...
You won't have a year, but you won't have that.
I understand that. We need to catch up to where we haven't... The things that are ignored for many years. And we are...
Well, we're catching up on something.
I'm just saying it's cheap money now that maybe, you know, it's time to catch up to.
I think that's for some of the stuff that's in here. I mean, we talked about, you know, I mean, and Mr. Nichols has already mentioned this, what is and what is not a CIP expense? You know, are replacing laptops really a CIP expense? I'm not so sure that really fits that category. More of a maintenance issue, you include that in an operations budget. Servers and networks. Equipment, you know, things of that nature. The others are CIP items because they can get expensive. You know, those are things that we need to be able to build in and say that we're going to meet these costs on a recurring basis. Some of the more operational and things, I think, are a little more. I mean, that there's more of an operational budget item, like a CIP request sort of deal. The some of the big rock stuff that you had on there. Go back two slides back, I guess. You know, future technology needs. I mean, you start talking about, you know, the data center networking equipment upgrade, you know, and the server virtualization. I mean, those are things that you're going to have to include in the CIP. There's just no way of getting around that. You either meet the cost or you don't. Building level network upgrades, I mean, that's something you've got to cycle through. You don't have any way of getting around that. UPSs, things of that nature, you've got to cycle that through. I mean, waiting 8 years for a UPS upgrade, I mean, they're lucky nothing shut down on that. How long are they even lasting at that point? And how long were they actually designed to last?
Well, 4 years typically, but not the batteries typically aren't supposed to last that long. You're supposed to replace the batteries in the units about every 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, typically you buy a UPS that lasts 15 minutes, you wait 4 years and it lasts like 3. So
it's like a laptop battery or a cell phone battery.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the UPS is always on too, so that's a problem. It's, you know, you're supposed to run laptop battery all the way down and recharge it fully to keep it on and just basic business. So but some of the other things, I mean, that's really where you've got to, you know, I mean, computer lab, LCD projectors, those are more maintenance items. It's the big rock stuff that we really need to be able to remove.
These kind of things have to be recognized that it's an ongoing operational need. And maybe you can't be perfect all the time, but regardless of whether you're talking about computers or you're talking about school supplies or you're talking about maintenance of buildings, that's what we need to build in to our baseline operational budget because it's a core requirement.
Right. And so this is where you get an additional problem too. You've got, you know, on the 14th, the schools decide whether or not to close Cunningham and Columbia. That's $900,000 there. You have an additional $1 million coming through there, but you've also got about anywhere from $1 to $1.5 million request coming back from the school. If we don't know which one it is, you know, probably on the 1.5 area. So we can always say, yes, we think these things are important, but at the end of the day, it's the school board that makes that determination. We can pinky swear on it, but again, the school board's the one that's ultimately going to make the determination, decide whether or not those things are priorities above, say, furlough days, for instance. You know, things of that nature. That's over, of course, salary increases if the council does the 2%, and you have to match it with another 2. You know, those are things that are a little bit more beyond our control. However, for the CIP stuff, we can prioritize it. We would just have to roll it into the CIP and make it a part of the plan. That's really where we're handcuffed to a large extent. With regards to Abrams, I share Mr. Chester's concerns. I think I share your concerns. concerns as well. It's just not the most modern facility you could possibly want to have for your equipment, and especially considering it really is the hub for just, you know, for the county and for the school system. You know, getting over that, I mean, it comes back to, you know, I could spend all that money in CIP and throw it there, or you could go ahead and try to put it in a facility that I think at some point in time we're eventually going to have to make that consideration. Now, how that gets wrapped in, I mean, at some point in time you've got to move to elementary school, it's got to go somewhere, maybe it goes on a campus somewhere, maybe you kill two birds with one stone. I don't know, but that's a conversation that goes down the line, hopefully not too much further down the line, but you know, the county's got to make that, or the school's got to make that determination, and the county's choosing to get it. So, you know, no easy answer there. But I think that hopefully that's a little bit more helpful. I mean, it's certainly helpful to us. We can go ahead and point to some of the one-time CIP requests.
And part of the reason I'm checking this, part of the problem is none of this is on CIP.
No, it's not true.
Sure. And even forget the stuff down below that might be more operational.
Right. I've been speaking to vendors to get more concrete numbers, just so that we can provide better information for you.
Numbers won't get on there unless it's here.
I understand.
But don't we have the CIP a constant budget place for things that goes on there every year, like school buses, aren't they?
Yes,
usually, they're on there. So some of these things, people, but they're not something you have to discuss every year. Maybe the numbers may change.
But that's the basis of the discussion, Mr. Booker. On the bottom, those items on the bottom, if you look at unit cost of those items, you're talking about $700, $800, $900 a pop. Are you going to put those on there when you're talking about school buses? Yeah. $40,000, $50,000, $30,000,
$40,000.
Yeah,
but
what
we're
saying is,
go ahead.
Yeah, what Mr. Booker is saying is, so you have the second, third, and fourth ones on there. You've got $350,000 on a one-time cost. You have $150,000 that are cycled through every single year. So what you do, hypothetically, for FY14, you meet it all, and then in FY15, it's $150,000, and then you allow
$200,000, $150,000,
just do a wedge $150,000 and let the schools.
Social Services uses a third-party contractor.
Okay.
Oh, Registrar.
No, I was talking about Social Services.
Registrar has a third-party set of systems because they use state systems.
Right.
But they
registrar, we take care of just as if they were HR or finance or another county department.
If I were a sheriff, there's no reason why they would have to be that way. They've just been that way since they moved over to those new buildings. But theoretically, as long as you could get signals open and have support, you could be able to do that. But you'd have to stretch Jonathan and Andrew probably to go right now.
I can attest to the library because I used to be their contractor. And I only spend about 20 hours a year there, so I think they can handle it.
The sheriff's office is a little more complicated, but again, they just happen to have fire in both of those places different than the rest of us do. Jonathan and I have talked about this. I don't see a reason for the library or the sheriff's office to be any different than my office or any other county department office. It just is what it is, and sooner or later we'll look at it too. Social services, while they still remain a non-deviating agency, I'm not even sure how to approach that angle. The system they say that can't possibly against them because it's the word of the law.
Well, I think the social services agency
is
still different.
So saying that.
So many, yeah, I think they're.
Well, they are, except that there's lots of other examples of not this way.
Right.
That's an ongoing.
I know the Marshall Academy is huge. I mean, there's all sorts of savings. The IB versus the market favor were just too small.
Well, if you were a place like Alamar County, and you said you wanted to create a new IT department to cover all IT for the county, for county services, I'm not sure you save numbers of people still, because you still have to go to locations. And the skill sets of an IT tech that goes into a school that works on the educational systems and the machinations of those is a different skill set than what Jonathan and his staff have. It's not that they couldn't cross-train, couldn't learn those, but there's a pretty distinctive set of differences in the kinds of applications they support. In our size, you guys chime in, certainly the skill, I'm sorry, you skill can jump in there. I'm just not sure how we would end up with, you still have people at different sites in our county. You still have 8 people. I can't see how we could possibly get smaller than what we are. We're just barely squeaking by now to save the schools. And the collaboration is what we're doing now. We're collaborating to whatever degree we can. But having a joint server with, you know, virtualized and thinking, well, this is my piece and this is your piece, there's still some unique problems associated with sharing that way, if you're talking about systems that I can't have access to because of the data security requirements. But I just don't see a benefit to the Nevada County to do this at this stage. Well, Mrs. Keller can speak up any time.
Okay.
Through the collaboration, though, you're finding some services that you can share in certain.
For example, this year, both of us have never been able to run fiber ourselves. We've always had to contract it out. So we have a need to run fiber in a lot of our buildings. So I went out, talked to vendors, had them come in, show us how to run fiber, how to terminate fiber, got us trained with their termination kits. We purchased a kit, and for the gas pump system that we just replaced, we ran our own fiber for the first time. We terminated, and it worked. So now we have a savings there. Now if Jonathan needs to run fiber somewhere, he can call us up and say, hey, would you help us run fiber? We're doing that sort of thing all the time. What are you using for content filtering? What are you doing for server virtualization? What are you doing for computers? You know, we were just talking about the new Microsoft Surface that's out. It's like a tablet style, like an iPad. You know, are you getting one? Have you tried it out? We're constantly talking to feel each other.
Yeah. That's what I said to him.
Honestly, that's the kind of collaboration that's been ongoing, and that's useful and fruitful for us. But if I saw some benefit there, this is all I talk all the time about what can we collaborate on and what we can do to save each other time, energy, money, personnel, whether it's, you know, building maintenance or grounds maintenance or vehicles or fuel. Just sort of just as an example.
I actually think, too, that knowing the nature of what Mr. Gifford has to do, that what he has to do, especially for the testing piece that we're required to do, would actually become disruptive to the technological needs for the county. I see that. But as Mr. Nichols said, I do really, really want us to embrace opportunities where we can have some shared responsibilities and dialogue. And I think, you know, the maintenance of grounds, maintenance of buildings, training. The other thing in terms of finance is that in about 2 weeks, 3 weeks most, we'll have some information where we're getting through Honeywell a review of all of our utilities and how we, our expenditures, and are we doing the best that we can do. That'll be finalized as we prepare for next year. And what we were thinking is that you know, we'd work even more closely, Mr. Breslar and Ms. Harlacher, and with your purchasing, is he a purchasing agent?
Purchasing officer.
Okay, purchasing officer, that there are things that we purchase that are common that we could even purchase together in more bulk and that could save us money. So I've had my staff really look at that. I would want to do whatever, for lack of a better way to say it, whatever makes good sense for efficiency and savings. But sometimes I think, and this might be a good example, we could work ourselves into a frazzle to get nothing more than what we already have established together, because I've encouraged my staff to connect with county employees and to see where we could merge some of our resources or, like I said, at purchasing.
Okay.
What's on the side?
Gentlemen, we good? Okay.
He's making a motion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any further business for the board? Very
good. Thank you.
Motion to adjourn, is there a second? Motion to adjourn, Mr. Chester, second to Mrs. Clover, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Next Wednesday, Wednesday, I'll sort of.
Next Wednesday, 7:00.